So I'm just going to start off with this question. What is the best part of living in San Luis Obispo for you? What is the best part of living here?
Well, it's a really beautiful place. I think it's easy to almost take that for granted, but when you compare it to so many other communities in the state, we've just done a really beautiful job in maintaining and protecting a lot of open space. And so that in and of itself just makes it a really special place. I think a lot of times we're a coastal community, but we're not necessarily beachside, but also the beach itself is so close and accessible. So all the aspects of nature here, I think, are a huge part of what makes this a really beautiful place to live.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about your grassroots campaign, for people who really don't know that much about it?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start by sharing just a little bit about myself, that I came to San Luis Obispo actually with the purpose of attending Cuesta. So I grew up in Pasadena, but I came here to go to Cuesta first, actually, and then I transferred to Cal Poly. So I was recently honored to be one of Cuesta's honored alums. It took me a long time to get through Cuesta. So for those folks that are also on a long journey through Cuesta, you too could be mayor one day and get Cuesta honor alum. I think it took me, I was at Cuesta off and on, but mostly on for about 10 years. So anyway, I really appreciate Cuesta. It has a really, I have this real soft spot in my heart for Cuesta for my own experience, but also then as a mother, as a single mother in particular, homeschooling my kids, Cuesta really offered a great pathway for both my kids to start college at 13 and go on to pursue the majors of their dreams in four-year colleges. So thank you to Cuesta. It's been a huge part of my life. I got involved with politics originally, probably about 15 years or so ago, and it was climate change that really inspired me to get more involved. And so, long story short, that led me to run for mayor in 2016 and then re-election in 18, and here I am again in 2020. And so we do have, I would say, a real grassroots approach to what we're doing. We have a lot of small dollar donors, for example, a lot of students, up to retirees. So we don't, it isn't a corporate sort of attitude that we have. I really am committed to people, planet, and prosperity. And so I've always been committed to those things, of course. And now more than ever, a lot of those things are becoming even more important to people. Top of mind for everyone, I'm sure, is COVID and especially the health, number one, but then also recovery from the major economic impacts of that as well. And so, yeah, we have a grassroots team who are committed to keeping this type of leadership, this experienced leadership in this time of crisis moving forward.
You're welcome. So I want to ask you just, how have you changed? How have you grown in the last two terms,
Love this question. I, on a personal, but I guess also political level, am very interested in personal development and very interested in intellectual, emotional, psychological, and spiritual growth, all of those things. And so I think I've grown a lot in the last 4 years since I've been mayor. It's been a great experience in that way, even though at times it's also been no doubt the hardest thing I've ever done. I would say the last few months in particular have, without question, been the toughest months of my life. And as everybody probably is well aware, it is in those struggles that we do grow the most, that we do learn so much, and that we also find meaning in that struggle. And it has pushed me to really keep recommitting essentially to be my essential self. And that is a lot easier said than done. I think, there's a lot of things on Instagram or whatever, like, oh, just be you, and of course, just be you. And though, when you're in a position like mine, the pushback around my being myself sort of is pretty strong at times. And so, it's been a real challenge to maintain that level of authenticity that I'm committed to be, I think it would be fair to say, a really bold and courageous leader on a lot of issues that, from my perspective, honestly, should not be neither be controversial nor partisan, but somehow still are. And to take a stand for people at a time when people are being consistently attacked from the federal level on down. And so I have grown a lot through all of that. And it has been incredibly difficult, but I've been very grateful for that journey.
Yeah, you have had an amazing journey. I was doing a little research earlier today, and I happened come across a newsletter from the Los Angeles Times.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this year, which I was like, I had no clue. And I didn't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, so 2020 has been hard for everyone, right? Of course. And on a personal level, it's been really difficult for me. And if you look back to the very beginning in January, I have had so much abuse, basically, from, I want to say people in the community, I assume most of them do actually live here, but it's hard to know because it's mostly internet-based, right? So much misogynistic and violent threats and all of those types of things that, you're right, the LA Times did a story on me, and you kind of used me as an example of what's going on out here for female politicians, and in particular, female mayors across the United States are experiencing similar types of really toxic environments in their jobs. I mean, also just want to make it clear that I receive a ton of support and positivity, and I very much appreciate that. But the negativity and the threats and the misogyny are really off the charts right now. The day that that LA Times article came out, a stalker that I had had for at least a year, I think it was coincident. I don't think it had to do with the article, but just to notice all these things really stacking up, he jumped over the security wall at City Hall to try and get to me, and my city manager had to wrestle him basically to the ground and hold him until the officers come, and we have a restraining order against him currently. And then it seemed like it was just a few weeks later that COVID started. And so that has been incredibly challenging to navigate in a leadership position. And then last, but certainly not least, the racial uprisings, which I feel very committed to in terms of my level of solidarity and support, have really challenged me and this community to in ways that it hasn't been challenged before. And so that's also been difficult, but really important to navigate.
You know, talking about that LA article, you know, you have other people who are running against you and their critiques, you know, do you think that they are ready to handle things like this? You know, really, I mean, do you think?
I mean, I don't really know them that well. So on the one hand, I want to say that I trust that people can meet the moment, you know, but there's no evidence of that. So like, for example, my main opponent has never attended a city council meeting or any other civic engagement that anyone I've been talking to has ever been aware of. And so it has no context, no knowledge of even how city council meetings are run, which is one of the number one jobs of the mayor, and hasn't really had a chance or made the effort to build those relationships in the community. And so while I am a big believer in it, you don't have to be a certain type of person to run for office. I do think in order to step up, especially into an executive leadership position in this community, that you do need to have a lot of previous community engagement and commitment to this city, especially in a time of crisis. You know, now isn't a time to have someone that has never been to a city council meeting leading the city. Right now is not a time to have someone that doesn't have that context and those relationships and that deep understanding of all that we've already done to inform all that we need to do moving forward. So yeah, so that's kind of my sense of that particular dilemma.
So what's fueling the fire for the third term? What's really fueling the fire behind this re-election?
Yeah, so it's hard to, in spite of all of those threats against me and all of that, to continue on, right? Like, that's a real question for myself. You know, even my own parents have said, maybe you just shouldn't be doing that anymore. They're worried about me. You know, I'm only making just over $1,000 a month. Like, there's a lot of pieces to this that make my life on a personal level really difficult, you know? And so, yeah, it's funny when you're an adult, you're the mayor, I know my parents are proud of, but they're also like, okay, time to get a real job. You know, like, let's go, let's get moving. So those are all real choices that I'm making. And so why do it again? And definitely sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and ask myself that question too. Like, why am I doing this? And I think what I'm feeling more than anything right now is a true deep sense of radical responsibility. And as an aspect of that is protecting, I think I would say, what we've done and who we love in this community. What I hear is, especially from people in marginalized groups, that, you know, this has been in many ways the first time that that conversation has been had in a really meaningful way, that you have had someone really standing in solidarity with people of color, LGBTQ plus community, immigrants, undocumented people, all of these things. And also, like, let's also be clear, this is about a yes and. This isn't about someone that can only do those things. Those things get a lot of attention, and I take a big stand on those because it's mandatory that someone does, in my opinion. So it what happens is it tends to, people can easily manipulate that and say, oh, I'm only doing these things around justice. But let's also be clear that we just closed an $8 million funding gap due to COVID to balance our budget last year. You know, we have committed so many resources to helping businesses recover from COVID. The list goes on and on of the very pragmatic and practical things that we're doing as a city. And I'm grateful for that, because that does give some space for leadership to step up and step up for a lot of these folks. And so at a time when people's rights are more at risk than it seems like they've almost ever been, at a time when people's very lives are at stake, whether it's Black people being disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system, or whether it's climate crisis, or all of these things that we face, we have done a lot on all of that since I've been mayor. And so it would be unbelievably crushing to see so much of that just thrown to the side if we didn't have this consistent type of leadership in this crucial moment.
So let's do talk about some of the protests in the Black Lives Matter, because you have just passed a budget, you know, for $160,000 for your task force. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a huge thing. And looking at your Instagram, I've been following you on social media, you have a lot of young people, a lot of people. And, you know, and we know that right now social media is the way to get out there. But what's so great is that you have people who are for you, who are connecting to all those people that you cannot, right? So can you tell me about the power of, you know, of social media and, you know, how that's working for you?
Sure. I mean, it's definitely a mixed situation. My commitment to myself is to leave Facebook as soon as this election's over. And I've been communicating that out on my Facebook page, to invite people to follow me over to Instagram. I do know, I recognize Instagram is owned by Facebook, and so some of the problems are still there, but just the culture of Facebook is so toxic with the comment section and all of that, that it's just a huge distraction. And I'm no longer creating content for platforms that I'm not in alignment with. And so I do feel a responsibility to stay on there till the election, but as soon as that's over, I will be solely, I think, on Instagram. And I learn a lot, actually, on social media. I tend to ask a lot of questions, to say things like, here's what I'm doing, here's what I'm thinking, what do you think? What's important to you? And so I get a lot of really helpful feedback through these sort of social media relationships. And one of the main things I'm trying to do on Instagram is show, not tell, right? To be what I guess someone might call a role model, right? To not just be saying, you should do this, you should do that, da 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 da. To just do the thing that I'm trying to be a part of creating. So for example, I'm car free. I only have this little red electric bike. And so yeah, sometimes I'll do a post about me on my bike. Why? Because I wanna show people that this is possible, it's doable, and you can do it in an aesthetically interesting way. So I'm trying to attract people into doing the so-called right thing by what I'm doing on social media, and really show people that I'm out here actually doing it, and I'm inviting you to join me in doing it.
And do you think that the younger vote's going to help drive you to a successful, you know, campaign?
It's a great question. I think if young people vote, that absolutely will be helpful to me. I just worked hard building relationships with young people over the last 4 years. I'm very oriented in that way anyway. I think I have a very maternal approach in the work that I do. So even regardless of people's age, I think I have a maternal sort of relationship with this community in general. And I think that's why at times I can be quite fierce, like any other mother animal, you know, especially right now where I feel like a lot of the young Black community members here are being disproportionately punished for some of their so-called actions. And so, yes, they are organizing, and if they vote and if they vote in slow, that will definitely help me. Unfortunately, young people still tend to be low propensity voters, and there is a lot of confusion this year about who's living here because of COVID and that sort of thing. And I think students that don't fully live in slow do have a tendency to still want to vote back at home. So we'll see how all that plays out.
Excellent. Nice. And how do you feel about the mail-in ballots going on? Do you think that's going
to... I mean, I think we should always have mail-in ballots. It's the easiest thing. And it's not just easy because it comes right to you. But I know even me, who's pretty involved, when it comes to things like the propositions, they're very complex usually. So I like to have that moment where I can have some time, open it up, do my homework, fill it out at home, find one that I wasn't anticipating, call a friend, you know, all that kind of process. I think the at-home ballot is really good. The downside, I think, is that voting is such a special responsibility that there is a little bit of a something lost when you do it at home alone in a vacuum. I think ideally we would have all the options and have a holiday for voting, and people could go in person and not have to worry about having to leave work or things like that. And it could be a real celebration. Like, you could imagine it, for example, being folded into the 4th of July, you know, something like that.
And I have voted already, just so you know.
Okay, great.
Already out there. I can't give any information, but you know. But yeah, I had to go through the process. And I think you're right. I think a lot more people this year are really taking the time to read things, and they're talking to their friends, and they're really researching things out more so than ever, which I think is so great. You did touch a little bit on I know you're very fierce and you say how things are, and I've been following your campaign in every single letter, you know, even to the fact of your letter to the district attorney. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's so respectful for you to do that, because you believe in something and you stand behind, you have a backbone, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, that one in particular, it came out yesterday, is pretty edgy for me. And I don't normally actually ever sort of go after someone. I really try and talk mostly about ideas, vision and value, and what I believe in, and talk about the positive, constructive world that I'm trying to create. And though there comes a time where a situation I think is so dangerous and problematic that someone needs to put into concrete words the concerns around that. And so with this recent round of charges, I feel more than ever that I have a lot of concerns about what's going on at the district attorney's office. I know a lot of the community does. I'm certainly not alone in that, but there hasn't necessarily been a lot of public conversation about it. And I felt strongly that it was time to say something along those lines. You know, I maybe could have said it in a slightly softer way. So I'm always, you know, like trying to navigate all of that. But they came after one of my favorite youth leaders. And it's not so much like he's my favorite, so I'm protecting him. But what I mean is, here is a kid that is at the top of his class in Cal Poly Engineering, the son of Ethiopian immigrants, a kid who I think, you know, prays on a daily basis. This is a great person and will be a great man when, you know, after he leaves Cal Poly. I really feel like it was incumbent upon me to take a stand in protection of him, but also in protection of the process here in San Luis Obispo.
Okay, so tell me about your signature look.
Okay.
I think you have this just fantastic signature look.
Thank you.
And what does the rose represent, and why the color red?
So I am from Pasadena, and it is the city of roses. My great-grandmother was in the very first rose parade in the 1800s, and I think that's where the seed, so to speak, got planted. Then, again, still in Pasadena as a teenager, I had a single mom, and she would always take me to these so-called Mexican restaurants. They're called Acapulco. Anyway, it was clearly, you know, appropriated vaguely Mexican food for geared for white people, I realize now. But what I loved about it is that these beautiful women were the servers, and they had, you know, these basically what were costumes, right? And these gigantic paper flowers in their hair. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, this is what I want to be when I grow up. I want to work here. I want to have this outfit on. I want this giant flower in my hair. This is the peak of adult awesomeness, what's going on here. And so that was another point, I think, that influenced that. And then I think it was probably in my early 30s, for whatever reason, and I don't remember the exact moment, that I just started wearing them in my hair all the time. And so I've been wearing them for, you know, 20 years at least, every single day. And so then, though, what's happened is, when I got more politically involved, it became this point of a lot of controversy for people, which is kind of blows my mind, but I get a lot of negativity about it. And I think it's because, too, that it's unusual, right? I present in an unusual way for a so-called politician. And also what I think it indicates, and what people pick up from it, and they're correct. And that is, here's someone that's doing something differently. Here's someone who may not do what she's told, so to speak. And here's someone who is neither apologizing or asking permission to be my full self and to be my authentic self. And last but not least, and I get it that gender is a construct, and for lack of a better word, I would say it's also very representative of the feminine energy that I do strongly feel we need more of in our communities and in our politics in particular. So every day I put it on, it's sort of a little mini ritual in recommitting to myself and my authenticity, and a recommitment to courage.
This is your platform. So yeah. I just want you to talk to, you know, the students of Cuesta College, and just, you know, tell them why they should vote for you.
Sure. So thank you for bringing that up. I think that, you know, when I was at Cuesta, I don't know how involved I was in the local political conversation, and that was probably a real missed opportunity on my part, because then I went on to live here, to raise my family here, to be a single parent here. And it's been a struggle here for me to be able to afford to stay here. And I didn't realize then that pretty much everything we do all day, there's a nexus with politics. Why is it so expensive to live here, for example? There's a nexus with politics. Why do certain people get arrested and certain people don't? There's a nexus to politics. Whatever is concerning to you, the lack of maybe meaningful jobs for you to graduate from Cuesta and stay here and work, there's a nexus to politics. And I think the local level is actually the most important level in terms of engagement. So I would absolutely encourage you to vote. For people that tell you that voting is a sham and all of that sort of thing, I just think, I get that there's parts of that that could be true. So let's vote in this election to get some leadership into positions where we can at least have a chance of continuing on with our democracy. Let's be really clear that we are in a crisis situation at the federal level. And that has to be remedied, just for our very lives are at stake in that conversation. And it's really on some level just as important here at the local level. As I said, I was a Cuesta student for a really long time. You and your voice absolutely matter. So I would encourage you can go to my website. It's HeidiHarmon.org. And I would ask you to vote for Heidi Harmon for mayor this year.
Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time. And
thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome.